Hey everybody, Scott Burnside here. Another episode of Two Man Advantage, the podcast. I feel like now this show is like a pair of slippers. I feel very comfortable sliding into it. I know Pierre LeBrun. It looks like some workers may not be hard at work yet in Toronto as we're taping this around 9 o'clock in the morning. So Pierre, good. We'll try and take advantage of the quiet. And today, a special treat as we head into the second half of the NHL season. You know, he's been biding his time, very patiently waiting for the call to come and join us. Arthur Staple, our man. I was going to say on the island, but you're everywhere now. You're sort of on the island when the Islanders play there. You're in Brooklyn when they play there. You're on the road with the Islanders. But Arthur, it is grand to have you aboard here. Welcome.
It's delightful to be here, Scotty. I'm really excited.
Well, listen, before we get to the Islanders, which they may be one of the, and I'm using my air quotes here, they may be one of these stories as we head into the second half of the NHL season. But I just want to know, because it's been a while since you and I've hung out on the road together, and I just wonder if you sort of changed your attitude toward the whole jukebox mantra, the jukebox society, and you know, whether you've sort of opened your mind, you know, to listening to artists, you know, like Edie Brickell or Peter Gabriel, and whether if you sort of just become a more gentle, kinder person than I've known you to be in the past.
Well, I'll have you know, Scotty, that Edie Brickell and her husband Paul Simon are neighbors of mine. They live in the next town over from me up there in Connecticut. So,
well, la di da.
Yeah,
I'll have to just say that if either of us has greater respect for Edie Brickell, I'd have to say it's me, because you know, sometimes I might see her taking out the trash or at the corner store, and you were just, you know, programming songs of hers into random jukeboxes around North America. So let's just say that I have a healthy respect for her and her music. I just choose not to listen to it when I'm out having a good time. Okay.
Okay. Well, that's it. I'm a live and let live kind of guy. I just wanted to get that out there, because sometimes are. I am. So, and Pierre and I have spent a lot of time huddled around jukeboxes around North America and beyond. And I, you know, we're pretty sensitive to the whole jukebox culture, and just want to make sure that we're all like, we should all get along. I think that's really the message I'm trying to bring here.
Sure, but let's, I have a healthy respect also for Pierre's jukebox musical tastes.
Thank you, Arthur. Thank you. I believe Scotty's supposed to say duly noted now. So we're going to be in San Jose next week for All-Star. And as usual, there will be a battle of wills over the song selection between Scotty and I.
That's it. But I have the app, and Pierre doesn't know how to work an app. So there, I think I've got it.
That's
got
true.
A leg up.
That's true. But
actually, this is a good sort of segue, because at some point this spring, we may be gathering, there's parts of our athletic hockey playoff coverage team, may be gathering in a place I would never have imagined we would be gathering in the spring, and that is at Barclays or some other Eastern Conference city to watch the New York Islanders play playoff hockey. And I got to tell you, they may be one of the most confounding teams to me. And I was just looking before we started taping, Arthur, that, you know, right now they have 56 points. They were plus 18 in the goal differential, which is tied for first in the Metropolitan Division. They're 3 points back of both Columbus and Washington. They, you know, their power play isn't very good. Their penalty kill is meh. They're middle of the road in goals scored per game. They are tied for the league lead in goals allowed per game. And I'm just curious about what your expectations were when you came into training camp and Barry Trotz arrived and John Tavares. As Barry Trotz was coming in one door, John Tavares was going out the other. And I wondered if you thought at the midpoint of the season, I wonder where the Islanders will be. Is this where you thought they would be? Very much ensconced, not just in the playoff spot, but really a team that could, you know, depending on how things go, certainly not beyond the pale to suggest they could win the Metropolitan Division outright.
Yeah, I'm certainly not alone in saying that I didn't think they'd be anywhere close to where they are right now. And you know, I think not just losing Tavares, what kind of emotional and blow and on ice blow that was, but they had a big, you know, it was a big Titanic sized ship to turn around. There were definitely some good pieces still, even without Tavares, that Gar Snow left in place, but you know, they gave up the most goals of any team in a decade last year. I just didn't see how they could make such a quick turnaround with essentially the same personnel. You know, that Tavares is gone, Calvin DeHaan is gone, Yara Halak is gone, and the guys that they brought in were certainly not people that anyone thought would be leading the charge. So, yeah, it's a testament to what Barry Trotz has been able to do from day one, and what sort of stability he brings to a team that hasn't had an experienced coach like him, and maybe ever. Maybe, you know, Al Arbor was a four Stanley Cup winning coach, but he wasn't that when he got here. So that's an incredible transformation, and I think the guys that Barry brought with him, Wayne Lambert, who does a lot of the heavy lifting for him, and Mitch Korn, who the goalie whisperer, who's got Robin Leonard playing like a Vezina Trophy candidate. And, you know, that's not a sentence I thought I would say before the season either. So there's a lot of genuine surprises having to do with this team. And I think a lot of it begins and ends with Barry Trotz coming in.
Yeah, I would think, Arthur, I mean, we've got lots of hockey to be played here, but easily the two biggest surprises in the East so far this year are the Islanders, I think, at one, and Montreal at two, given their expectations for both teams entering the year. So that would automatically put Barry Trotz and Claude Julien, I think, in some Jack Adams consideration. Although, as a side note, I love, this always makes me chuckle, John Cooper is probably going to end up with 125-plus points for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I won't get a vote for Jack Adams, but it's always funny how people vote on the Jack Adams. But what I wanted to get to with the Islanders, though, is it's what's fascinating to me is Lou Lamoriello takes over. And, you know, the normal course for a veteran GM when he takes over a team, if you take over a team, it's because someone's disappointed, right? That change is needed. And it just so happens that this is a roster full of pending expiring contracts. And so the opportunity is there for Lou Lamoriello to bring change. And yet, why would you want to bring a whole lot of change to a team that is succeeding? So what's your take on that in terms of an interesting decision or decisions ahead for Lou Lamoriello in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think it's been said many times, you could go broke betting on what you think Lou Lamoriello is going to do. And that's going back three decades or so. So I'm not going to think that I knew anything. But certainly when he came in, the way that he talked and, you know, leading into the draft, seemingly the goal was to get a number one goaltender through a trade, through free agency. Wasn't able to do that and ended up kind of, consolation prize with Robin Leonard on a one-year prove-it deal after all of his off-season struggles that he chronicled for us in The Athletic. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, not really committing to any of those other guys that have been here a little bit with Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, and Jordan Eberle has been here a little bit less. To kind of wait to see on what the season was going to look like. And really, I think maybe the tide started to turn a little bit when they put the C on Anders Lee's chest right before opening night in Carolina. That sort of said to me, this is a guy they want to keep around. And I think, you know, spending even as a little time as training camp, as Barry Trotz did around Anders Lee, understands, a lot of people understand that this guy is a natural-born leader and is certainly, maybe his skill set isn't as elite as some guy like John Tavares, but he'll make a good captain. And I think that sort of said early on that he's someone out there they're not looking to move out. When it comes to Nelson and Eberle, still not much traction there in terms of contract talks, it seems, or if anything. But again, like you said, why would you move them? If the market for a pending free agent, you know, wing like Jordan Eberle is going to be pretty crowded, as it seems, since there's lots of teams out there that probably want to sell. Would it be worth getting a third round pick or a third and a second back for him, and then having to fill that hole on a team that might be headed to the playoffs? It seems like the patience that Lou has shown with these free agents is maybe not paying off in terms of drumming up business, but it's paying off in terms of producing a decent team and maybe thinking differently about the future with the guys that they have here right now.
Yeah, and he's had an interesting history, Lou, where he hasn't been swept up by the historical trend of teams wanting to get asset value back for pending UFAs. I mean, just last year, he was GM of the Leafs and kept JVR and Tyler Bozak because the Leafs were playoff bound. And obviously, those guys left for free agency. But in the in the cap era, cap space found is cap space found. So the Leafs obviously used that cap space to sign John Tavares, not to remind any of our Islanders listeners here. But so I think I don't know why he would move Jordan Eberle, to your point, if the only Islanders have a chance to do something here. If he if they can't sign him after the season, so be it. It's not the end of the world in my books.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Arthur. Yeah, we made a passing reference a couple times to Robin Lehner, and you referenced the piece that he wrote for us in The Athletic early on, and a very personal examination of his own issues with alcohol and drugs, and where he was at personally and emotionally, all those kinds of things. And not to overstate it, but it takes up a high level of bravery and courage, I think, to as a pro athlete to make those kinds of comments, and especially a player who's just now coming into a new team and all those kinds of dynamics. And I wonder what you've maybe seen from Robin Lehner on and off the ice in terms of his personality, and maybe sort of spinning forward. I mean, is there a sense, could he be the goalie that this team has been looking for? And as we're chatting here, he leads the NHL with a 2.16 GAA. He has been everything and more than they could have hoped for. How does he fit into this, do you think?
That's a big question, certainly with all the news that came out of Columbus this past week with Sergei Bobrovsky and sort of, his incident seemingly cementing his departure from there, and Pierre and plenty of other reporters have connected the dots between the Islanders and Sergei Bobrovsky only given July 1. But Robin Lehner, if you can get him for half the term and half, maybe less than half the cost of what Bobrovsky's looking for. He's a bit younger. He's seemingly rejuvenated by the turnaround in his personal life. He's handling it well. That stuff, obviously, we all know people that struggle with that, with addiction, and it's a day-to-day fight, but he seems to be handling it and handling his professional business incredibly well. And in the locker room, I'd always heard in his previous stops, he's a very candid guy. He loves to kind of assess the situation with the team and speak very bluntly and freely. And he's maybe not quite as blunt as he used to be, but he speaks his mind, and he's very he seems very introspective this year. All the conversations that I've had with him, whether about a story that I wrote early in the year about his first road trip when we were out in California for a week, and what kind of how you have to handle that, being sober and trying to stay sober in addition to leading the pro athlete lifestyle, and just talking about his game or sitting in the locker room. He and Leo Komarov love to volley the troops back and forth across the Islanders dressing room. I just think the way that he's fit in too. I imagine that with him and his family, he's got a couple of young kids and his wife on Long Island. They fit in really well. I would imagine he would want to stay, and maybe that leads you to a discounted deal versus what you might get with a guy with his numbers on the open market. So, I'd have to think there's a future for him here. And if he continues to this is above what I think he could do long term. But if he's a 9.18, 9.20 save percentage goaltender, that's better than the Islanders have had, forever. Much like Barry Trotz, this is new territory for this organization that's struggled for, since Billy Smith hung him up to find a goalie that can handle a real workload and be a guy that's reliable. So, I imagine that the seduction of a guy like Bob on July 1 is tempting. But if you've got a guy here who you took a chance on and is rewarding that chance with a fantastic season, why wouldn't you commit to him a little bit more in the long term and then look at your other options down the road?
Yeah, no, it's an excellent point. I texted with you yesterday, Arthur, before I wrote my Bobrovsky update, and I made sure to mention just that about Robin Lehner. It certainly would make, because the Islanders have always seemed like this July 1st front runner for Bobrovsky, but now I'm not so sure. Unless Lou Lamoriello thinks having both in the fold, Lehner and Bobrovsky, would give him the ultimate 1-2 punch, but I don't know how realistic that would be. So we'll see. I mean, I always think that one of the tough things about predicting July 1st is that the playoffs tend to completely rewrite a lot of scripts in terms of what teams are going to look to do. So I predict that we're going to have a team we're not even thinking about because they currently have a pretty good goalie that's going to decide they need a new goalie by the end of this year. So so there's so much to play out when it comes to Bobrovsky in July 1st. But sure. Go ahead, Arthur.
Just that the other minor factor, maybe not a minor factor, is you know, maybe the Islanders' best prospect is a guy named Ilya Sorokin, who's lighting it up for the last couple of years in the KHL for the Red Army team. He shares an agent with Bobrovsky and shares a hometown with Bobrovsky. Paul Stefanos represents them both. Sorokin's been, you know, he signed a long-term deal with KHL, and I think he's one more year beyond this year to go. But he's a guy that, when he's ready to come over, maybe before the 2020-21 season at age 25 or 26, he's a guy that has played pro for a long time and played at a high level. So, you know, if you're committed to Bob for 7 years, is that a guy that's going to want to come here and shoot the net? So, again, I think that's, you know, Lou is familiarizing himself with prospects like Sorokin, and maybe that's something that's kind of an X factor that we haven't really considered about their pursuit of a number one goalie. So,
right. Interesting.
Good stuff. Arthur, before we let you go, I'm curious about what you make of the Metropolitan Division. Where how do you break things down as we do head into the second half of the season? You've seen lots of the competition. I mean, is this Islander team, are they a playoff team? Where how do you see it sort of sifting down with Washington in the midst of a mid-season swoon and Penguins doing their thing? How do you see it shaking down?
You know, I kind of felt before the year that it was pretty wide open. I didn't include the Islanders in that, but now that they are kind of pushing up towards the top, it feels just as wide open as it did. I mean, I think there's a clear line of demarcation that you know, the Rangers and the Devils and the Flyers are kind of below the watermark. Carolina's kind of bubbling around it, and the other four are kind of the class of the division right now. And, you know, Pittsburgh bounced back from their struggles, and I'm sure Jim Rutherford will be active in the next, 6 weeks until the deadline. And, you know, funny enough, Pierre, we were talking about PDO before we got on the air here, and the Islanders have been kind of called the unsustainable PDO darlings of the season so far, but they've consistently been behind Washington in that category all year long. So,
right, right.
Obviously the Islanders don't have guys like Ovechkin and Backstrom, the top end guys that Washington has, but it's interesting to me to see the style that Barry Trotz instilled in Washington in the last couple of years of shot quality over shot quantity, and how that's reflected in their pretty high shooting percentage, and tried to do very much the same thing with a much less skilled team with the Islanders, and it's been working so far, which is surprising. I mean, Dal Filppula scores the OT winner last night. That gives them, I believe, seven or eight guys with 10 goals now. Barely halfway through the year, so they're spreading the wealth, and they're, you know, they've got a lot of guys that have embraced that that shoot for goals when you have a quality chance mentality, and it's interesting to see both of those teams kind of up there in that PDO number, and one team, the Islanders, kind of gets dismissed, and one team, the Caps, because of who they've got on the team and what their pedigree is. Maybe people feel it's more sustainable without, but it's just interesting to me. And, you know, and obviously Columbus, super talented, but who knows if it can all hold together for these next few months. So I think there's a real opportunity for the Islanders here to not only steal a playoff spot, but maybe even get into that top two, start a series at home. That hasn't happened since 1988 with this Islander team. They have not been the higher seed in the playoff series in 31 years, which is a crazy number.
Scotty wanted to let you go, Arthur, but sorry to interrupt. But we have to get to Tavares one last time, because I was just thinking, after the Islanders and Leafs just played, if there was any way to have a crossover series between the two teams, and it would require one team to finish quite higher than the other, and to have obviously a wild card set up somehow. But as you know, I wrote that piece where I interviewed Lou Lamoriello ahead of his return to Toronto last month, and the comments section just lit up, as did Twitter, as you saw, and it is quite unbelievable the level of what word would I use here? Help me out, Arthur. Let's just say that even with the Islanders having this sublime surprise season, it has not tamed their anger. at Tavares's exit. And I must say, as you know, when you get to know John Tavares, you just can't believe what an amazing guy he is. Like, it's so, you know, sometimes I could see why things are derived at a certain athlete because of the way they handle themselves. But this guy is all class. But I get it. I mean, the Islanders fans feel betrayed. I mean, it's one of those old natural emotions of sport, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, John is a student of the game and loves to talk about those kinds of things. I think he understood at the time that obviously it was an agonizing decision for him as late as it went into July 1. And, you know, I think he understood once the euphoria of making that decision, the relief wore off, that there were going to be some unhappy people down here. And, you know, I think when it comes to things like Twitter and social media, it's always, you know, maybe the 1% of the fan base that's a little too intense and crosses a line pretty regularly. And I think that goes for all teams, not just the Islanders. And, so, you know, I think in general, it's when he comes down to play here and both games, there's one at the end of February and there's one, I think it's the last home game of the regular season. Both are going to be at the Nassau Coliseum,
which is awesome.
A little loud,
yeah.
Which is a little louder and a little bit more passionate. And I think the reception is not going to be great. But I, you know, my hope is that first night everyone gets it out of their system. They vent as they vented to me on July 1 and for the days afterwards. And then on April 1st, I think it's April 1st. You know, maybe there can be a little bit of reconciliation, especially if both teams are headed for the playoffs. They're not headed for a playoff series with each other right at the following week. And maybe the cooler heads will prevail and people will accept that he made his decision. It seemingly worked out well for both teams, if that's even possible to say. And people can appreciate the decade that he spent on Long Island being the face of a franchise that needed an anchor like him to get out of where they were.
Yeah, well said.
Okay, now I am going to let you go, but first I have to, has there been, Arthur, any kind of confirmation or discussion about just what a, you talk about the possibility to be the home team in the playoffs, a home's a relative term for the Islanders. Has there been a discussion about what the Islanders would do vis-a-vis the home ice during the playoffs? Is there a chance that there would be some home games at the Coliseum during the playoffs? Is it all only going to be at Barclays in Brooklyn, or has the team sort of publicly broached that topic?
Now, for me personally, I would think that if you in this crazy situation the Islanders are in, you should petition the league to be able to reveal the site of the game maybe like 12 hours before to really poke your opponent a little off balance. But I'm guessing that's not allowed. So my understanding is they had to have a plan in place, and I believe that plan is Barclays Center. There's a number of reasons for it, but I think there's a continuity reason from the start of the year, because when we started this season, you know, the Islanders were only going to play 12, you know, back in the summer, the Islanders were only going to play 12 games at Nassau Coliseum. That moved up to 20, which is basically an even split. They've only got three left now at Barclays Center for the rest of this season. But I think there's that aspect, and I think it's a financial aspect. That, you know, Coliseum is not really outfitted to make a lot of playoff revenue. There's, you know, they've reduced the number of already small number of suites that were in there before. You know, I think Barclays is just better equipped, and I imagine there'll be some unhappy fans because they wanted to get used to being back on the island. But also in 2016, when John Tavares scored that OT goal in Game 6 to beat the Panthers, Barclays was as loud as the Coliseum has ever been. So I think, I hope, but I don't have to hope too much that the really passionate Islander fans, of which there are many, will fill the building in Brooklyn, no matter who they're playing against, as long as they're in the playoffs. Because by then, I think a lot of the fans will have finally moved on from Tavares and moved on from the building stuff, knowing that their future is on Long Island, and they'll just be able to enjoy a team that no one thought would be anywhere near the postseason if they get there.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, Arthur, tremendous stuff. I know that you probably got What I Am queued up on your disc box iPod thing or whatever it is you listen to your music on. And do pass along our regards to Edie Brickell when you're out slugging your garbage in your Tony neighborhood. And it's been a real treat to have you on Two Man Advantage. Let's revisit this as we get closer to the playoffs. It's a great story. And as always, you've done a masterful job of covering it for The Athletic. So thanks for hanging out with us today. It's been a treat.
I'll have to research some quality establishments that you like to frequent either in Brooklyn or Long Island for us to maybe record a live one during right before the playoffs begin.
Oh, count us in.
Right on. Right.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Arthur. That was, Pierre, probably people don't know, Arthur has given me a hard time over the years about my jukebox selection. So I'm looking forward to, you know, maybe connecting in person with him in as the playoffs get closer and if the Islanders hang in there. So I think that's a good thing. But that was terrific to catch up. And, Pierre, as always, I know you aren't going anywhere because we will return in the briefest of moments with the second segment of Two Man Advantage, the podcast. So don't go away. All right, my friend, let's whip through the second segment here. I got to tell you, I'm really looking forward to a week from now, give or take, you and I will be in the same physical location in San Jose for All-Star, and we'll be taping Two Man Advantage live, as it were. Just means we'll be sitting a lot closer than we normally do. And mm-hmm. Before we move on, I got a couple things I want to run by you. Certainly, Arthur mentioned Sergei Bobrovsky. I'd like to get your take. You had an interesting piece on him. But I wanted to just to go back to Barry Trotz for just a minute. And I wonder, you and I were both sitting in the media area at T-Mobile Center after the Capitals won Game 5, won their first ever Stanley Cup. And I wonder if you were worried for Barry Trotz, not that it's our business to worry about him, but, you know, to go from such an emotional situation in Washington last year, the last year of his contract, and, you know, as the playoffs went along, it seemed very clear that regardless of how it turned out, that he would be moving on, even though it sounds so strange for a Stanley Cup winning coach to be changing jobs. But sometimes coaches who are emotionally invested over a long period of time, they seem to need a break, and you and I have talked about this in the past about John Tortorella and going to Vancouver very quickly, and maybe, you know, should he have taken some time to breathe? And I wondered if you felt the same thing about Barry Trotz, because he signed very quickly his new deal with the Islanders, and especially with Tavares leaving almost immediately after Barry took the job. You know, did you worry that it would, what kind of situation it would be for him? Mm-hmm. Because he's emotionally invested. He always is, and the good coaches are. And I wonder if you're surprised at that level of things, because he's really, you know, he's done a heck of a job there and with the Islanders.
Yeah, I mean, I guess his situation is a little more unique. I mean, I worry about coaches who have been with the team for a long time who get fired and then take a new job right away, because there's a certain mental duress that comes from having your pride shattered by saying you're not good enough anymore. And then if you turn around and start working right away, I feel like you carry that burden of I'm going to prove everyone right away. The one thing I'd say in this situation is that the guy won a cup, so that should alleviate some of that duress. I mean, no matter what was going to happen in his first year with the Islanders, no one's going to begrudge him from not knowing what he's doing. So I would say it's probably a little less stressful for him than what it would be for a quick turnaround for any other coach, because usually it comes after a real tough ending for that coach. The other thing is, a lot of coaches, the end comes rather abruptly, and it's kind of a shock to the system, whereas you sat down with him during the playoffs, he knew. Like, Barry Trotz knew probably before the playoffs even began how things were going to play out. So I think psychologically, and it allows you to prepares your family for what's ahead. And I mean, I wasn't the only one, but many of us reported during the Stanley Cup final against Vegas that we thought the Islanders would be a player for him once the Cup final was over. So there were hardly any secrets, and I think that probably helped the transition for him.
Yeah, no question. And I mean, honestly, if they make the playoffs, whether they stay in the top three, whether they get home ice advantage or not, to me, if the Islanders make the playoffs, and your point about Claude Julien in Montreal is a very good one. In fact, they have one more point than the Islanders and hold down the top wild card spot as we're taping this. And there are always lots of good candidates. Bo Peters in Calgary should get a lot of recognition there. Pete DeBoer in San Jose. But I just don't. To me, it's like it's going to be an absolute no-brainer. If that Islander team makes the playoffs, I just pencil in Barry Trotz right now. But anyway, that's me. So, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Barry Trotz is. I mean, are you wanting me to name the Jack Adams winner now? Is that it?
I'm just saying, you know, yeah. To me, it's like last year at this point, everyone had, you know, because Vegas was so good, everyone said, well, Gerard Gallant is for sure going to be it. And I, you know, again, I'm not going to quibble with that. Jared Bednar did an amazing job in Colorado, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And maybe this isn't exactly the same, but, and especially with Buffalo sort of falling as we're chatting now, they've fallen outside the playoff grid. And I think a lot of people looked at Phil Housley early when the Sabres were, you know, challenging for first place in the Atlantic, that Phil Housley might have been that guy this year. But, and maybe the same thing happens to the Islanders. But to me, that Islander team is, my goodness, it's on paper, they're not an imposing group. And mm-hmm. here they are. So. Anyway, I do think
Barry Trotz is the leader right now. I think Bill Peters is probably number two right there with Claude Julien. I mean, given the turnaround in Calgary. But again, I mentioned this earlier, and I have to double down on it. I think it's hilarious that, I mean, the Tampa Bay Lightning, as we take
agreed.
This, are 16 points ahead of the Toronto Maple Leafs in their division. And is John Cooper even going to get a sniff at the Jack Adams? I mean, you and I don't vote on it. No, the broadcasters.
No, we don't. We can say that.
It's just, I don't know. It's one of the gripes I have with the award, that the award has become which team surprised the most. And yes. I get it, because if you surprise the most, that means you got excellent coaching. So I get it. Yeah. But how is John Cooper not doing a great coaching job this year? His team might have the most points in the salary cap era.
Yes. And I think here's my guess right now, is that there are two, and maybe let's say for argument's sake, the standings are what they are now. To me, it would be the three. I think you're right. I think it would be Barry Trotz. I think it would be Bill Peters. And I think John Cooper gets in there too. But I think he has zero chance of winning, even though he will be 40 points ahead of the Islanders or whatever it is at the end of the season. So your point's a good one. Let's move on. I wanted to, you had an excellent piece on Sergei Bobrovsky this week in The Athletic, basically talking about his no trade, no move, and this notion that did the incident that led to his being kept away from the team for a game, and as our guy is Aaron Portsline, who was on last week, and others have reported it stemmed from the fact that after being pulled in a game against Tampa, if I'm not mistaken, that he changed, showered, and basically was unavailable for the balance of the game, which is that's wrong, right? Like that's not how you do it. And the team was upset. Obviously, John Tortorella was upset, and it led to his Bobrovsky being kept away from the team for a game. So I know it's a long thing. I'm getting to it though. And your piece talking about his situation as he heads towards possible free agency and whether this changes it. But as you wrote, he has been open from the beginning to exploring possible trades if it was something that worked for Bobrovsky and for the team. And I wonder,
right.
Do you think this changes it? And I want to add a second layer to this. Does all of this change what his value is? If you're a team that's looking, whether it's at the, you know, leading to the trade deadline or looking for future into July 1st as free agency opens up, does all of this change how you view Sergei Bobrovsky and a player you might want to lock in for, and whatever the term might be, 5 or 6 or 7 years? Does this change that, do you think?
No, because he just looks to me like a guy that just needs a change of scenery. And I still think he's going to be a top five goalie in the world, a 2-time Vezina trophy winner for a reason.
Yep.
But what's fascinating to me, and I just, it was one of those things where I just couldn't let go of it last week because of the incident last week. And I kept calling sources around the league to try and figure out if there was more to the story. And finally, obviously we stumbled upon it, that because I think our assumption was that we didn't know if he would ever waive, that he might just walk right into free agency and really screw the Blue Jackets, essentially.
Right,
but
yeah.
But as I reported, it turns out, in fact, that through his agent, Paul Theofanis, I guess, they not only told the Blue Jackets last summer they weren't going to negotiate an extension, but they eventually provided a list of teams that they might waive to go to if all things worked out. And I suspect part of that was, you know, perhaps signing an extension with that new team. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I can tell you this. My understanding is Jarmo Kekalainen, the GM of the Blue Jackets, never phoned any of those teams, never acted on it, wanted Bobrovsky to be part of this season, and that's his right. I mean, yeah. The Jackets are all in. They're currently tied for first place in the Metro. And I think it same with Panarin. I think that right now, and maybe this changes between now and February 25th, but right now I think the sense is let's try and finally have a playoff run and we'll deal with the rest later. And so now here's the one thing I want to say. I'm just reading one of Aaron Porcelain's stories from training camp. As you remember, Bobrovsky made quite a eyebrow-raising comment on the eve of camp, and I'm going to read it here. This is on the eve of camp this past September.
Look at you doing research. I love this.
He said, I quote, "After last season, I told the situation to the management of the Blue Jackets so they know everything. They know my plans for the season. They know my plans for the future. They know everything. They know exactly what we're going to do." Now, at the time, most of us translated that comment as to mean that, well, we're not signing, which, of course, is still true to this day. But we now know that what he was also saying is we gave them a list of teams. So it was even more involved than that. And again, I understand why the Blue Jackets, the Blue Jackets, it's okay to commit to a season after everything they've put into building the team as it currently constitutes. It's a good hockey team. It's a team that was almost up 3-0 on Washington last spring. And I think they made the call last summer that despite the body blow that it was to not have Panarin and Bobrovsky sign extensions, that they would put all their eggs in one basket for this year. The only thing I would ask you, I guess, would last week's incident give them pause for thought now if teams start calling again on Bobrovsky? Just in the sense of, you know, is this going to be an issue the rest of the year?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's how does it not become an issue? And basically the guy, you know, and is it an unforgivable act? I mean, yeah, maybe there are some people out there who go, well, big deal, right? He got yanked from a game. He wasn't going back in. So he went and he got cleaned up so he could get on the bus early or whatever it is. But you know what? I can, and certainly the reporting seems to suggest that this was not, you know, this wasn't, and you had this right from the get-go. This was not a blow-up with John Tortorella and Sergei Bobrovsky specifically. This struck at the heart of the team concept. And fascinating.
But hold on, Scotty. But that specific incident wasn't. But let's not kid ourselves. Still a frayed relationship between Tortorella and Bobrovsky as far as I can tell, like overall.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think there is, you know, and you go back to the beginning. I mean, there's a guy who has been only ordinary in the playoffs the last 2 years, you know, was ordinary last year and was less than ordinary the year before, and basically has wants no discussion about, it doesn't publicly acknowledge that that's the case. So to me, there's a great disconnect on, you know, where he's been at with this team and his level of performance, et cetera, et cetera. So to get back to your question, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Because to me, the question has always been, regardless of how good Sergei Bobrovsky is during the regular season, as you know, he's a two-time Vezina winner, what can the Blue Jackets realistically expect from him in the playoffs? And I don't know that anyone knows the answer to that. And
I don't think it's fair just to put it on him. I think as a team, they've had guys struggle in the playoffs too. Like, I don't trust him. I mean, the goalie's always going to share a bigger part of the pie on that. But here's the problem for Jarmo Kekalainen, as I see it right now. I mean, if he was going to trade him, he should have done it last summer. Problem now, as I spoke to a team executive from another team yesterday, if you're interested in Sergei Bobrovsky, like, we'll put a couple of teams out there. Let's say you're St. Louis.
Right.
Why would Doug Armstrong give up assets for Sergei Bobrovsky now unless he thought Bobrovsky could save their season? And to be fair, they're not completely out of the Western race now suddenly because it's a turtle race in the West for the wild card. But if you're Doug Armstrong, why wouldn't you wait till July 1st and give up no assets to get Sergei Bobrovsky? So I think that's one of the positions now that Columbus is in. And again, I don't think Columbus has ever had any intention of moving him. Let me double down on that. I honestly believe that Jarmo Kekalainen has never phoned a single team this year about him. But I'm just saying, if he changes his mind now, you're going to run into that in terms of teams that just say, you know what, we'll just wait till July 1st. Secondly, even if he did find a trading partner for Sergei Bobrovsky before the 25th, and maybe he will, he then has to turn around and find another goalie. He can't just...
Agreed.
I mean, this is a team that wants to win this year, and Korpi Salo has been a terrific story of late, but he needs a, you know, I know they're happy with some of the guys in the organization beneath too, but he needs an experienced goalie to come in and help Korpi Salo. So who's that guy? That's a separate trade. So, right. Again, there's lots of time between now and February 25th, but it's not just about whether or not he gets a really good offer for Sergei Bobrovsky. It's about the fact that he wants to win, and he needs goaltending right now.
Well, he and his management team would basically be, they would have some sleepless nights because there were, as you point out, lots of moving parts, right? So you're talking about finding a partner, moving Bobrovsky, getting appropriate assets, then making a deal for, whether it's Jimmy Howard or, you know, whoever it is, to come in and fill that vacuum. So I'm with you. To me, the simplest thing is the status quo. And they knew from the get-go what the landscape was going to be. They didn't know they were going to have these kinds of public headaches, but... Yeah, I think you just my guess is they maintain the status quo, and if you're Jarmo Kekalainen, to me you have to focus on, okay, how else can I, you know, is it a defensive depth add, is it, you know, they're trying to add down the middle to strengthen themselves for a potential first round playoff series against Pittsburgh or Washington or possibly the Islanders, a team we've talked a lot about. So to me, that would be the focus, as opposed to, my God, can I make three different deals to sort out this goaltending thing? So I'm with
right.
you.
And I guess just to finish that point, though, Scott, the point I would make is I would not begrudge him at all for doing the status quo through the deadline now at this
Agreed.
Point.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I don't know. But I don't know if we won't look back after the season and wonder if he shouldn't have explored the trade market in the summer.
Yeah.
I guess that would
I think that's fair.
And I'm not saying we will. But I think that might be the only thing that you look back and say, was it worth, you know, was it worth keeping him now that you know how it all played out? Who knows?
Yeah, that was a good point. All right. Just one thing I wanted to touch on before we go, and you alluded to it, the turtle race in the Western Conference. I had to tell you, I look at the stands every day, and it's like lunch bag letdown every single day. And in fact, I saw a press release come out from the Anaheim Ducks the other day, and I was like, oh my gosh, Bob Murray has done it. He has fired Randy Carlyle. And no, it was exactly the opposite. After another loss, Bob Murray came out with the unusual, certainly for him, I think, because he's pretty closed guy publicly. And he came out and he said, basically, I know fans are upset. They have a right to be upset. But basically, I'm not going to fire Randy Carlyle. I'd like my team to play better. And then he traded Andrew Cogliano to Dallas for Devin Shore. And of course, it didn't help because now the night before you and I are taping this, they went their 12th straight game without a win, another loss. And yet, and this is my point, I'm getting to this now, where as we speak now, that team, winless in 12 straight games, 2 points of the playoffs. That's a travesty.
And Colorado lost 9 of 10, I think.
I think it was 9 of 10.
And not only are they in the playoff spot this morning, they're not even in a wild card. They're third in the third
place. It is.
So it's
embarrassing.
The top of the West is fantastic. I mean, Calgary, yeah. San Jose, and Vegas are three juggernauts in the Pacific. And obviously, Winnipeg is Nashville as advertised in the Central. But after those five teams, oh my goodness, who knows what we're getting? And you know, there's a 7-point difference between the last playoff spot in the East and West right now. That is remarkable. Is a real difference. I mean, what does 7 points translate to by the end of the year between the East and the West for the last playoff spot? 12 points? I don't know.
Yeah, it's huge.
So it is crazy. It's allowed teams like Edmonton and Vancouver and even St. Louis, which seemingly was white flagging it 3 weeks ago in terms of, you know, teams phoning and trying to vulture players. And it's crazy, yeah. So, I think what it really tells you, and it's similar to last year when Tampa really, I mean, listen, I say this all respect to the Devils, and the Devils were a great story last year. Taylor Hall won the Hart Trophy, but the there was such a cherry on the sundae for Tampa Bay to win the Atlantic last year over Boston and Toronto, because they cakewalked over New Jersey while Boston and Toronto had to slug it out over seven. Same thing will hold true here for whoever wins the Central, whoever wins the Pacific. It'll be worth it, because I think getting one of those wild card teams instead of having to battle, and to have a much tougher battle, especially in the Pacific, right? I mean, if you're Calgary and you win the and you avoid San Jose or Vegas in the first round, that's a big deal.
It's huge. It is huge.
So that's going to be a big storyline.
Yeah. Okay. Just before I get, how much does this change heading into the trade deadline period, though? And as you mentioned, okay, so you got Edmonton, Vancouver, Anaheim. They all have 47 points, so they're 2 points back of Minnesota in the second wild card spot as we speak. St. Louis fired their coach. Team is in disarray, but they've got the rookie goaltender up now. They're starting to play. I mean, they're not, like, let's not overstate it, right? They're still not a very good team, but they are starting to play a little bit more like we thought they would. They're just 4 points out of the last wild card spot
with games in hand on everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So do you think this changes then? You know, because the East, there are six sellers, right, or whatever that number is now. You just look at the standings, you go, okay, Jersey will sell, Florida will sell, go on down the list. The Rangers are going to sell. So you know, you can look at the marketplace shaping up in the East, because it's that, as you point out, the standings are a little bit more defined. But here, you're like, well, if you're Doug Armstrong, and with lots of rumors about he might be willing to move anyone, including guys like Tarasenko and Alex Petrangelo's names out there, all those things, do you suddenly look at it, or Bob Murray, who's made a hockey deal the other day, but you're like, okay, well, if we have a good week of play, we're going to be in the playoffs, and there you go. Who knows? So does it change, do you think?
I think, like, for example, if we go to St. Louis, some of the conversations that Doug Armstrong will have had over the last month about some of his guys that teams are calling about, those are things that can wait till the offseason anyway. If he needs to. Like, it's not like if people are making mega offers for Tarasenko or making offers on Braden Schenn or Colton Parayko or Alex Petrangelo, none of those guys are UFA July 1st. So the Blues don't have to act on any of them unless they think that offer won't be nearly as good after the season.
Right.
So the Blues really don't have a gun to their head on any of that stuff. They can really, I mean, you know, they've got a couple of UFAs, but none of their core guys. So I don't think it changes much other than maybe they put pause in some of that and reconvene in the summer on whether they want to rejig their team again. I think for the Ducks, I wrote this, but I mean, Jakob Silverberg is the most preeminent potential trade target for other teams, because he's a pending UFA, unless he resigns, of course. Now, Bob Murray has publicly said this week he wants to try and sign him. He really likes the player. But I don't care if they're in a playoff spot or not come February 25th. If Silverberg isn't signed, I think he deals him.
Right.
Like they're just not an organization that sits back and says, we can lose a guy for nothing July 1st. That's just not going to cut it with them. So I think Silverberg knows that. So that's one of those where, you know, whether they're 4 points up or 4 points out, it won't affect his status. He needs to sign or not.
Right. But Edmonton's a team that I think is where it, at least if, you know, the buzz out there is that Peter Chiarelli, I mean, they're 2 points out as well, right? 2 points out and desperate to make the playoffs, right? I mean, you got Connor, you got the best player in the world on, you know, by lots of standards in Connor McDavid, and looking at missing the playoffs for what, third of his 4 years in the NHL. So the desperation there. So like Edmonton hanging around, they look like a team that would wants to add very badly. I mean, do you think that's fair as well?
The Oilers have to make the playoffs. There's incredible urgency throughout that organization that it's simply unacceptable to miss out again. After they made it 2 years ago, accepted the step back last year to some degree, although with great angst. But if they miss out 2 years in a row, there's going to be more change there at Edmonton, no question about it.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. As always, my friend, a terrific time catching up. And again, look forward to next week meeting in person in San Jose and sharing a jukebox or two with you. And
our next two-man advantage podcast will be with you and I staring across the table at each other.
All right, my friend. Looking forward to it. And travel safely. We'll see you next week. But as always, good work and good to catch up. Talk to you soon.
All right. All right.